Hello everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are opening the old Disney vault and releasing our episode on Space Jam, which is our third episode and about $2,000 of equipment ago. So I know the audio is going to be a little wonky weird, but I wanted you to hear our fresh-faced voices from seven seasons ago as we were still desperately trying to figure out what was going on with this. We will also be releasing a normal episode this week in honor of the new Space Jam movie. We're doing a Looney Tunes movie back in action, so you can look forward to that. But in the meantime, thanks for listening, subscribing. You will still be getting a modern, regular episode coming up. And thanks! This week on Myopia, Defend Your Childhood, we ponder the theological dilemma of the good guy Looney Tunes living near the center of the Earth underground. We watched Space Jam. Do you believe you can fly? So, Scott, we're here to talk about a movie that you wanted to defend with me.
Yes.
Space Jam. What do you remember about Space Jam? Because, frankly, for me, it's a lot of blurriness and Looney Tunes.
I'm not going to lie to you. I have seen Space Jam within the last 3 years, I'd say. This movie is especially personal to me because, if you remember correctly, this movie is basically about how Michael Jordan leaving basketball was a way of him saying he just couldn't cut it anymore. And this is about him finding his game again. And when he leaves, he goes to play baseball. Now, when I was a kid, I was like 10, 11 years old at the time, we went to Birmingham and saw Michael Jordan play baseball for the White Sox minor league team. And I can tell you that he was terrible. This dude is 6'6 and like 200 pounds. He's the biggest dude on the field and is just terrible. So, I mean, it's pretty obvious they needed to make a movie and had to recruit Looney Tunes and Ivan Reitman and Danny DeVito and Bill Murray and Wayne Knight especially to get Michael Jordan to play basketball again and win three more championships.
Well, that's what it is, right? So let's get into this because this is 1996, I think, 96, 97? Yeah,
something
96.
Like that.
And we're talking about a time in Michael Jordan's career where the Bulls were on fire, he leaves, and then, that's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, he leaves, and it's Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant and them for a couple of years, and that's when the Rockets win all the championships with Clyde Drexler, Hakeem Olajuwon, and those guys.
And now, as a movie, we have to think about this because I haven't seen it all the way through probably in 10 years.
Nice.
And so I wanted to kind of do a two-hander with you on this because we are people who revel in irony, as our generation does, and comedy is really silly. This has all of the components to make this the kitschiest, most ironic movie ever made.
Yeah.
And especially with the cult of Bill Murray that's sprung up in the last 5 years.
Yeah. This movie's way ahead of its time for a lot of reasons. Not only the animation and Michael Jordan together and starring a basketball player, as Shaquille O'Neal would run with in the decade as well, but Bill Murray playing golf and kind of crashing things. Like, why is Bill Murray in this movie at all?
And he gets tagged in at one point, right?
Yeah. He not only crashes the movie or Michael Jordan's golf game, but he also crashes the game in the movie itself. Like, there's Bill Murray.
And that's what we're dealing with. And it, yeah, okay. So I guess we're running near the end of this segment.
Sure.
My question is, do you think it's going to hold up compared to how much other irony and such? Because Michael Jordan has no acting chops.
Right.
So he's acting against a green screen this entire movie.
Right.
Does it hold up in any way?
It's got to. It's the Looney Tunes.
Right.
The Looney Tunes writing and silliness should always be able to hold up. Michael Jordan being terrible is like, Dan Marino being terrible in Ace Ventura. Like, okay, everyone, he's gonna suck at baseball, at acting, and at basketball for a little while. and just deal with it because he's surrounded by Looney Tunes, surrounded by Bill Murray, Wayne Knight, a lot of guys that we're going to watch it and be like, all of that is hilarious and holds up really well. I can tell you right now, this movie will hold up really well on every end, on every aspect, which is why it's coming back kind of strong right now in like video games and memes and will LeBron James star in a sequel, that kind of thing.
Well, you heard it here, guys. Let's see how this holds up. Hi, I'm Nick Hoffman. Welcome to Myopia, Defend Your Childhood. We just heard at the top Scott Miller talking about, well, Space Jam, and we just watched, shockingly, Space Jam. We tried to watch a VHS copy of it, and guess what? Color doesn't hold up on the magic of magnet tape. So after trying desperately, we found a DVD copy thanks to Netflix, and so, tragically, you have to listen to us talking for half an hour on one of the most incredible Ivan Reitman-produced films ever, since Ghostbusters 2 Electric Boogaloo. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter.
Steven, coming at you from across the table.
Aaron, across from Steven.
And I'm Scott,
who desperately tried to defend this movie. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's try to figure out what happened in this movie. As best as I understand it, we have a young, maybe middle school-aged Michael Jordan desperately learning how to act over the course of 90 minutes and settling on maybe baseball isn't the opportunity after Angels in the Outfield was already a movie. So, Scott, this was your movie.
Oh, yeah.
And are you still proud of your decision?
I will own it. I am very proud of my decision. I think this is, upon seeing it again, beforehand I didn't think this would be as easy to defend as it turned out to be. But having watched it again and laughing a lot during the game especially, I'm pretty proud of myself.
Well, I'll tell you what. As far as my childhood goes, we've already ruined Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which deserves zero credit as being a movie for anyone. This movie reminds me a lot of our childhood. If only that when I grew up, Cartoon Network was nothing but Looney Tunes and old Hanna-Barbera cartoons, and this movie is like a primer course in that. Because if nothing else, Michael Jordan's career is washed up at this point, I think.
Yeah, this is the point where he's no longer 23 anymore, as we realize at the end there.
No, he's in his late 50s and probably deep in gambling.
I think when this movie came out, he was polishing off his fourth or fifth NBA championship, so he's not way over the hill yet.
No, not yet. So anyone want to try to summarize this movie? Anyone have the plot down? Because, frankly, it seemed like the plot of a Looney Tunes cartoon more than an actual movie. And frankly, other than the the cold open of a kid playing basketball, there's not much of an actual movie.
The movie is about Michael Jordan is the reason the NBA exists, and it can't go on without him. They might as well not play basketball anymore.
Now, I think I'm quoting you directly, but are you saying that in 5 years we're going to have a Tiger Woods movie in which he and the Disney characters have to save professional golf?
It's true. I don't watch golf anymore.
I would watch that movie, yes.
And the whole point of it at this point is that Michael Jordan, using only his shoes, by the way, is able to defeat the entire All-Star team.
Yeah, and a little cartoon steroids. Violence. Yeah,
and Bill Murray is his hero.
Yeah.
Larry. Okay, so let's try this. I realize that we've rushed through, but there's zero plot in this movie. Well, let's back up. Bill and Ted has zero plot. This actually is a movie in that it has the sports plot. A team that's down and out has to win due to unreasonable odds at the end. Right.
Right.
So we our cold open is young Michael Jordan, who apparently still can slam dunk even though he's a 6-year-old, although they cut away right at the last moment.
Oh, but his real dream is to play baseball, by the way.
Because his dad, who is played by, I assume, the guy from Family Ties.
Family Ties? Or, a bunch of white dudes.
Family Matters. And is playing basketball, sinking more free throws than Shaq did in his entire career.
Of course.
And then moving on to a
solid three-minute sequence of music and Michael Jordan's best.
Now, as someone who got their master's degree in film, is this an Antonioni or a Scorsese style open? It's been a while since I've seen Goodfellas, but I seem to remember
this style of a 3-minute full jock jam titles sequence.
I'd say it's either you're trying to build the movie up to a certain minute count to justify the $7 ticket that it would have cost at the time, or perhaps they got that footage for a cheap price and were looking to utilize all the footage they didn't actually have to draw.
Yeah.
So I realized...
You didn't have to refilm any of that Mick Michael act.
Right.
Hey, hey. He
Best
was
acting in the film.
He was acting as hard as he can. And as a side note, I mean, we know that these Looney Tunes were done by maybe 2 or 3 voice actors. So it's really the children acting against Michael Jordan or...
And winning.
And children. Winning. And Bill Murray acting against a plank of wood.
And winning.
So, after literally, this is, we timed this. It was 5.5 minutes, and 3 minutes of it was a montage sequence of chain link followed by Michael's name and then everyone else's name to a soundtrack produced primarily, hopefully, by Barry White, but we know it was not. We then cut to animation. We need to figure out here, as a group, whether or not the animation still holds up. And I think, actually, aside from the bad digital transfer, which the DVD has in spades, the animation is actually not bad.
This was the Looney Tunes trying 3D animation for the first time, as far as I remember. And it's kind of weird, you know, having, like, shadows on Bugs Bunny's face and, like, people kind of going in between the cartoon world and becoming this 3D thing that looks really cheap and not really all being 2D like we're used to, kind of like the Simpsons movie and stuff, where it's like, this is a little too polished than what I'm used to. I mean, it's not god awful or anything, but it's a little weird to me.
Although, I mean, it is a little disconcerting, but it does make them look more fluid with Michael Jordan. I mean, because if you look at something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, him being completely flat, I think the only thing really rendered in any way was Jessica Rabbit. Everything else was intentionally cartoony. This looks better, but doesn't necessarily look more fluid. I don't know. But we keep cutting between a fake world with regular, well, with pseudo actors. There's a shockingly small amount of actual actors in this movie. Right? I mean, it's the children who are all unnamed actors.
There are more basketball players than actors in this movie.
And most of them are better acting than Michael Jordan. I'm going to throw that out there. I don't know.
Except Sean Bradley. They all pretty much nail it.
Yeah. Sean Bradley also doesn't get any lines. Yeah. How many words does Sean Bradley actually say?
4. He taunts Michael Jordan at the end.
I am the tall one.
Yeah, I'm the tall one.
I did notice in the hospital scene, you couldn't even see him through the nurse's shirt. He didn't even get FaceTime in that scene.
Well, Charles Bradley.
It's Sean Bradley,
Charles
everyone.
Barkley.
None of you know who he is.
No,
look,
that's
him
the
up.
One name.
Yeah, long, terrible career.
That is the one name 15 years later where you go, who the hell was that guy?
Yeah, no one knows who he is.
See,
he
that's
was 7'6", drafted like in the top 5, and was terrible.
As the producer of the show, I realize we have hundreds of millions of listeners. ESPN, you need to call up Sean Bradley for an interstitial with the entire Toon Squad walking by one direction and all of them walking the other direction. because that would save the, I assume, flagging network of ESPN.
Yes.
So we haven't even gotten to Danny DeVito, and we've already been recording for 10 minutes. So Danny DeVito's in this movie, completely unlisted in the opening credits, because apparently One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is completely forgotten in the world's imagination by 1990-whatever-5. And he tells a bunch of, I don't know, Beanie Babies to kidnap basketball players and the Looney... Well, first the Looney Tunes, and then ultimately Michael Jordan, which we'll learn in some sort of Faustian bargain. The little Beanie Baby type characters are... Well, they show up with guns and kidnap Bugs Bunny, which involves going to the hell itself, to Looney Tune land.
They have to drill a hole to the center of the earth to get to the Looney Tunes world.
Well, and to make
what?
Sure, well, and to make sure we know that this is in real life, they fly over Michael Jordan's actual game where he's striking out with the catcher.
No coincidence there. Oh, the hole to Looney Tunes land is in the middle of Birmingham, Alabama. What?
And I think I need to check on this, but I believe it's the catcher from Major League.
No, we debunked that.
Oh, damn
sadly,
it.
Sadly.
Because this is right before they made the third movie, Major League 3, Back to the Minors. And this would be perfect as a crossover if he was back in the minors with Michael Jordan.
It was so, a prequel all along.
Dear Ivan Reitman, back in time. Thanks to Back to the Future, we know we can go back in time with a DeLorean and, you know, a suburb, which I live in. We need to tell him to fix this right now. But anyway, going back to the center of the earth, they end up giving us a 10 minutes greatest hits of the Looney Tunes, which is frankly garbage. But again, it's for people who had never seen Looney Tunes before. I imagine this is after Cartoon Network stopped renewing the Looney Tunes show, because it really is just a greatest hits album. Afterwards, what? I mean, like, where does this movie actually go? The plot progression is very weird, because we get an initial threat, and then it's like they're building a team like a cop movie or like a Ocean's 11, but then nothing really happens for 10, 15 minutes of this.
Well, they spend as much time on what happens to the Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, Grandmama guys without their talent. They spend as much time montaging them going to the hospital and the therapist and... as they do as showing any Looney Tunes playing basketball or
getting Michael Jordan shorts.
Yeah.
From a dog.
Yeah, it's from a dog, yeah.
Children wrestling Michael Jordan shorts from a dog is got way more screen time than the montage, which doesn't exist, of the Looney Tunes actually practicing basketball.
Right, well, yeah.
Well, what this movie is a set-piece movie, right? You have essentially... 10 minutes of plot development, and then a bunch of sets, right? Like,
yeah.
And now, in some ways, it works. I think the hospital scene is actually successful because something actually happens, which does not actually happen for 90% of this movie.
Some comedy happened.
Well, and what it is it's a sketch where you have probably, I assume, a bearded sketch comedian. Or something, an improv comedian.
Why is he bearded?
Well, he's bearded because, as we know from every set piece ever on a psychiatrist, to be a Freud type, you have to have glasses and a beard, which means at this moment, I am currently
so
a Freud.
So you're funnier than us. That's what it is.
Well,
this is group therapy, and we all know it.
So tell me about your id when you were a kid. Which is, I think, a Bugs Bunny line I stole at one point.
We're way off the rails now.
Because this movie was so focused and
yeah,
boring. The Academy Award for
it
Best
literally
Original.
It is like, if you just cut it together as the plot, it's like 14 minutes and then the basketball game, which is like a solid half hour.
So let's back up just for 2 seconds. They're talking about enslaving people the entire movie.
You see, these aliens come from outer space, and they want to make us slaves in their theme park. What do we care? They're little, so we challenge them to a basketball game. But then they show up, and they ain't so little. They're huge! We need to beat these guys, because they're talking about slavery. They're going to make us do stand-up comedy, the same jokes, every night for all eternity. We're going to be locked up like wild animals and then trotted out to perform for a bunch of lowbrow, bug-eyed, fat-headed, humor-challenged aliens. What I'm trying to say is... we need your help!
It's horrifying, right? Because there's a montage, in fact, of Michael Jordan enslaved, wearing manacles, trying to play basketball, and then working. Like, it's horrifying.
If you win, you get me.
Good deal, boss.
Hey, Doc, you think that's a good idea?
You'll be our star attraction. You'll sign autographs all day long and play one-on-one with the paying customers. And you'll always lose.
Yeah, it's a little dark. A little weird. I mean,
kids
a little
movie.
Out of place. Yeah, for a kid's movie.
There are some dark undertones, and you think about sort of the premise of the movie is that they're going to enslave the Looney Tunes and force them into their theme park to tell the same jokes for eternity, which is kind of what the movie epitomizes, really, because they're all cliches of the same characters they've been playing, telling the same jokes for eternity in hell, we assume.
It just got deep, folks.
Yeah,
strap in.
And I can't do any impersonations of the characters because I've done them on
pretty much. No.
I think Sylvester.
Sylvester does have the funniest moment in the movie, though. Yeah.
Oh. I don't know. I was voting for Daffy because at one point he gets knocked semi-conscious and goes, "But mother, I want to stay home and make cookies with you."
Then they cut away and stuff happens and they cut back and he's still doing it. He's still doing the bit, just climbing over other monsters. Like, "But mother."
"But mommy, I don't want to go to school today. I want to stay home and bake cookies with you."
Or Tweety doing kung fu for no reason.
Yep.
I mean, again, this movie requires Michael to stand there looking bewildered. And
extreme close up every shot of Michael Jordan, by the way.
And he is glistening. If there is such a thing as a golden god, he is sparkling. Followed by people who can actually act comedically. I mean, if anything, the casting of this movie is well done because you can put someone like Michael Jordan or Larry Bird opposite Bill Murray, and he can save a scene. Or Wayne Knight. However, you know, these people can actually be funny when Michael Jordan can barely read a line. And in fact, if I had been looking closer, I would have seen his eyes following the teleprompter, because I doubt he could remember his own line, let alone the number he's wearing. That's why his name is Michael. At least in Hulk Hogan, his name is like Hulk Johnson. But Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan because he can't freaking act.
That's why there were so many close-ups of his face. It's a lot harder to see his head tracking.
He's got one of those Aronofsky cameras where it just moves with his head. So you can't tell that he's moving and reading things. It's just his shiny face, his shiny bald face.
I also like to think that they didn't put him in a room with any actual voice actors so they could just act around him. They just had him wander off into the middle distance saying, "I'm going to play basketball." I guess that's more of a Charles Barkley impression.
That was
so let's get to, like, again, we're already 20 minutes in. We haven't even gotten to this.
What are we talking about here? What's the structure of this podcast?
Well, it's a standard three act structure.
What was act one? I missed it.
Act one was a montage in which Salt-N-Pepa sang a montage to Michael Jordan. And Barry White appears in this as written by Chris Rock.
Yeah, how have we've gotten this far without mentioning the soundtrack? The movie took all of 8 seconds to just really show off its ridiculous lineup it had for the soundtrack. I mean, it's just like, here's R. Kelly, here's Seal, here's Barry White, here's a rap song with every rapper that ever existed in the 90s. It's just a very, I don't know.
Well, and I need
it's
to
shocking. Yeah.
And because I usually splice into the theme some sort of music, and this is too hard for this, I think I need to underline most of this entire podcast with music from this, but Basketball Jones is the thing. I think it was written by Cheech Marin, right?
Oh. Yeah, serve a claw, rebound, out, I'm back. Yes.
Jones.
Come on, come on. And a quad.
An obsession.
Oh.
A burning desire. The undeniable passion. A love. For someone,
yeah.
Something.
Yeah, Charles Walker.
Nope. Ooh. Seal singing Fly Like an Eagle because Steve Miller's version lacked enough emotion, so we needed it dripping with raw sexuality in a children's movie.
Steve Miller's version was more of a scrappy, tough version of it. It wasn't like a fluid, athletic version.
And to quote our mutual friend Michael Krause, I've never heard anyone sing on lewds before, but I'm pretty sure that's what Steve Miller does.
Steve Miller has a microphone on stage that attaches to his face.
You won't like find a Steve Miller on Jock Jams. That's the problem there.
Steve Miller.
Now, I think Aaron brings up a good point. As a kid who played league sports in the 90s, whether it be baseball, basketball, what have you, Jock Jams is the soundtrack to my sports soul. And this movie is essentially the starting point of a young Mr. Jock for his jams, because that's all the soundtrack is, if not a soundtrack. So let's talk about this basketball game, because at this point, the movie actually is paced pretty well. For a terrible kids movie, it progresses.
It's an amazing kids movie.
I actually do think it really holds up. Some of the one-liners in there, sincerely, I was like cry laughing. The Mighty Ducks reference, the digs on Disney, there are a shocking number of digs on Disney in this film, and they hold up. They are still hysterical.
Oh yeah, no, like everything out of Daffy Duck's mouth holds up really well, especially.
Yeah. Frankly, it makes me kind of disappointed that there aren't more Looney Tunes things, and I know the next one is a Steve Martin movie, which by all accounts is garbage. I mean, like, really? And maybe it's that the premise is too straightforward, but this is funny in an honest way, which is all the more the shame that other things they do just aren't.
They tried to be the Muppets. Like, let's throw, like, our major characters into the real world and have Steve Martin and people like that also in the movie, and it'll work. But it doesn't really work. You're not real. You're not the Muppets. So, I mean, don't try to be.
No, and that's a good point. Like, if we're looking at actual cartoonish characters in the real world, this is different. Disney doesn't actually try to make that crossover very often, and that's why Who Framed Roger Rabbit is a big deal. This and the Muppets really make a transition, but the Muppets works. This seems to be really lucky, and it's actually a very funny movie because of that. And I think it works best in this basketball scene. So to progress the plot a little bit, the movie is not necessarily stagnant, but in 40 minutes, it takes us from real people to a world in which this crossover can exist, and introduces a handful of them to an artificial world, and does it fairly successfully. Not unlike The Matrix, which is also, you know, this deserves to be up with, you know, your Johnny Mnemonics and The Matrix in animated classic movies.
Keanu Reeves or Michael Jordan, who are you taking?
Oh, sweet Jesus. Now, Keanu Reeves does know
acting ability.
Well, Keanu Reeves does know Kung Fu.
I know
Jordan knows basketball.
Keanu Reeves can do at least one role successfully.
True.
That's more than I think Michael Jordan can say at this point.
Yeah, this was the only movie Michael Jordan could ever get cast for.
Can I have Bob Hoskins from Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Rest in peace.
We're all pouring drinks into the floor right now.
My carpet! Wait, how about Arnold Schwarzenegger? He's mostly animated, right? He's a robot.
He's an animatronic.
Can I have Anakin Skywalker from episode 1?
Oh, God.
So, the Monstars.
Right, the plot, the basketball game. So the basketball game happens. The whole point of the movie. They're playing a basketball game to defend themselves against becoming the slaves of Moron Mountain.
And as people who are watching the World Cup right now, we complain about penalties. There's no refereeing in this game, because at one point they just start crushing people with their feet. And that's the movie. Like, the movie is, we're tall and we're going to destroy you, followed by Michael Jordan scoring 40 points in about 6 seconds of game time. The game itself is about a 30-minute chunk of a 90-minute movie, which is appropriate for a sports movie. Though, as Steve, I think, pointed out at the top, There is actually no them getting better at basketball montage. This is the least sport movie in history, followed by the longest chunk of a sport movie in sport movie history.
This is a movie about the real sport in real life. It goes back, it knows it's so short, but it keeps going back to, like, the NBA can't exist. We can't play anymore. We have no more talent. We're going to cancel all the games until Michael Jordan comes back.
Well, I think we all learned from this film that as soon as everyone drinks Michael Jordan's magic stuff, I'll let that sink in.
Yeah.
That everyone will be able to play magnificently enough to beat aliens that have sucked out Patrick Ewing's.
We'll get back to sucking off Patrick Ewing in a second. This week on 30 for 30, the Monstars.
Oh my god, I hope they're listening.
Sponsored by Michael Jordan's special stuff.
Sorry. It's not water, we swear.
A giant Warner Brothers logo comes up and they kiss it right on the ass.
Yeah. Daffy Duck really does own this movie, doesn't he? It's Daffy Duck and Bill Murray. And like all the tall basketball players running into shit. Like their heads just banging into.
Well, it actually works because what Bugs Bunny is he's the straight man opposite Daffy being silly. And in a movie like this, we don't need a Bugs Bunny because Michael Jordan is the straight man. Right? Bill Murray can be silly and the straight man at the same time, but that's why he works against Larry Bird. I mean, you know, like you need someone like Newman to play against Michael Jordan because, you know, one is silly and one can't act.
Guess which one is which.
I'll give you a hint. One has shoes named after him and one is named Newman.
Can Wayne Knight act? Let's start there. Steve's nodding at me.
Well, because nothing works on a podcast like physical comedy. Wayne Knight can be funny. I don't know if he can act.
I just imagine he's himself.
Yeah.
Right?
He is. He's another. Going back to Keanu Reeves, he's that character that plays that one role really, really well because it's him.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, like, for example, in Jurassic Park, he really did want a candy bar before he ruined everything. He really did not want to work when he was on Seinfeld.
Spielberg really drew it out of him. You really want that candy bar. No, I got it. Trust me.
So you're saying that he is always method acting. He's just
always
him.
Yeah.
Just like Bill Murray is always method acting because he's just like, where are your umbrella hat? We're golfing himself today. Yeah. That's what
there's scenes where they literally just stop and look at Bill Murray like waiting for him to improvise the next line so they could play off of it.
Well, I mean, and the problem is this movie goes on 20 minutes too long because after the game ends, we really just need that moment where, like, an 80s boob comedy or an 80s sports comedy where the guy wins the trophy and he hoists it at the end and they go, yay! Because Bill Murray has his closing line 30 minutes before the movie ends.
They do hoist the trophy. It's Michael Jordan with a Bulls jersey dunking. With a, you know, freeze frame to end it at the end there. That's the trophy. Oh, we convinced him to come back. Good job, Bugs. Good job, Danny DeVito.
Basketball is saved.
Yeah, so, basketball is saved. All is right in the world.
So, we do have to have them not only return the powers, but he has to single-handedly still save basketball because the greatest players in basketball history can't save it without Michael Jordan, who is apparently some sort of basket Jesus.
It's true. They couldn't close out the movie with the audience still believing that Michael Jordan was playing basketball. Or not, playing baseball.
Right, exactly.
Who would believe
actually,
that?
One of my favorite scenes from this movie, watching it again, is when Michael Jordan does make his triumphant return, and he's plopped back down onto the baseball diamond from a spaceship. And they don't show the rest of the game, because it promptly goes over, and it's just a disaster.
It could only be better, since this was already the 90s, if Mulder and Scully were in the audience going, my God, Jordan has come back to finish the game.
Well, they can't play a game on the field. I mean, that field's ruined. I mean, the lawn team's out there for hours after.
Well, Well, but then you're right. Like, after returning the powers to people, he does become a basketball, some sort of basketball Jesus or basketball Jones, as the song would. I used air quotes. Note to audience.
we are an audio podcast.
Using air quotes. But we have this completely ridiculous lack of focus at the end of the movie, wherein then someone looked, well, the editor of the movie looked and said, well, we're 20 minutes short of an actual movie. We need a montage of proving that he returned to the Bulls at the end. And that's how it ends. We really have a 10-minute sequence before the credits start of him proving he can still play basketball.
There's really no other plot to this movie. It starts with Michael Jordan quitting basketball. It ends with him rejoining basketball. The rest of it is just what drives him to rejoin basketball.
Here's my theory. For the end of the movie is because Nike took a great picture of Michael Jordan slam dunking, and they said, we need to sell this. So we need 10 minutes to justify why this picture was taken, and we need to wrap some context around this, and that's exactly what it was.
Well, and I've seen some recent movies that are pretty bad on the sponsorship.
Oh, yeah.
This was subtle, but every sponsor he is a spokesman for was there, from McDonald's to Nike to, in fact, I think even Barkley was wearing a Nike jersey at the end. Yeah. I mean, come on, guy. And Spalding is everywhere, of course, because it's the only basketball that exists. Warner Brothers logo, like, just logo is on Daffy's butt, which he kisses. And one of two, I think, butt-kissing jokes, like, just direct butt-kissing jokes. What we have is some of the best corporate whoring in a long time I've seen in a movie, but they're perfectly aware of it. And actually,
it's very tongue-in-cheek.
It's fantastic. So before we close out here, because we're already at the half hour mark, Steve, who's your best actual character in this movie?
It's got to be Bill Murray, hands down.
Why?
Why does there have to be a why?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Aaron?
He's the only actual actor in this movie. I'll leave it at that.
No, that is completely, and it's clearly Reitman saying we need something.
Bill Murray says that in the movie.
Yeah.
Daffy Duck walks up to him and says, how did you get here? And Bill Murray's like, oh, the producer, Ivan Reitman, from Ghostbusters, is a friend of mine, had a Teamster drop me off. In the movie, he says these things. It's just like way beyond the fourth wall. Like, we literally had to go get Bill Murray to save this movie.
And while we're here, the best line in the movie is Danny DeVito's, where he says, why the hell is Dan Aykroyd in this movie?
Dan Aykroyd was the best actor in this film.
Aaron, do you have other than Bill? It's got to be Bill Murray, right?
Bill Murray is the reason to watch this movie. The solid 5 minutes that he's in it. But I really enjoyed me some Daffy Duck in this. I really did. I felt like he carried a lot of the corporate tongue in cheek, wink wink. Type of humor that I really felt like helped keep things going.
And just to build off your point, I think it almost made Bugs Bunny's character unnecessary, because if he usually played, well, because everyone else had their character. Even Elmer Fudd got to make the kind of goofy jokes, but since the aliens were like straight characters, he was a straight character, and Michael Jordan was a straight character, you don't need Bugs Bunny.
I almost felt like he was only there to justify the hypersexualized female bunny role.
He was. He was the horny teenager, and that was it.
Yeah.
I would say the opposite, which is that you needed a romance of some sort, so you give it to Bugs Bunny, because he has no other reason to be a character in the movie.
I thought they just needed a female in the movie.
So they hire an
actor. Granny didn't satisfy?
Yeah. They hire an actor to play, like, an actor who I recognize, an actor to play Michael Jordan's wife. How long do we think he's in the Toon World at this point? Like, weeks? Like, an hour? How long is he gone?
Oh, God.
Why don't we...
There's no way to know.
There was no
concern. Why do we hire this woman to have one line and not have, like, any scenes of, like, looking for Michael Jordan? Like, where is my husband? Why do I have all these kids and their father
disappeared? And the kids know where he is, and they don't tell the
mom. He's on a minor league road trip? Yeah, the kids know the Looney Tunes have him, and they're just like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, whatever.
Thanks to Jim the Amazing Shrinking Dog for half of the movie. God, that was an amazing... But again, what were they doing for that entire montage but griping about the, the sponsorship deals from the merchandising? It's a very...
We need better agents.
We need better... Have you seen a cent about that money?
I can't do Daffy.
Yeah, it's hard.
All I can do is a Kermit impression.
And Scotty Boy.
What?
Do you have a character that's worth anything?
Well, honestly, I think the disgraced NBA players actually stole the movie from it. Because they were, you watch Michael Jordan for a solid 20 minutes, you're like, this dude is just terrible at acting. And then they throw Muggsy Bogues at you, who's like spot on with every line he's got, and like Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing are like actually able to not be terrible, as I would have thought they'd be.
I thought their chemistry was cute.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah, well, they all got along. They're all competing against each other on a daily basis, but they're all getting along like, oh, we're terrible.
Well, no, and you can totally watch someone from ESPN kind of tenting his fingers in a burn style going, good, good. We need that Charles Barkley on our broadcasts. Or I guess Turner. But no, I totally agree. Those are the scenes that probably work the best with actual actors. Because again, Michael Jordan, 90% of this movie is against a green screen where it's he's acting against nothing.
Which is hard even for seasoned actors to do.
I think it was a choice because they could have had him with actors but chose to just say, Michael, just say things because we're going to watch you do dunks for 20 minutes and then animate around you. I'd like to think there's some sort of tape somewhere with him, like, actually dealing with people, and they're just like, no, we need to cut all of this.
You said look over here.
I would watch
that movie.
You
said Bugs would be over here.
No, we need to play harder, guys. His rallying the troops speech is just, let's go.
You ready to go?
You guys ready? Let's go. He has one tone, just one level. It's crazy. None of the other basketball players did. They all spoke like they're humans.
As a cutoff screen artificial arm holds up Tweety Bird, he goes, you okay?
God damn it.
That's what this movie is. A bunch of Michael Jordan not acting and people making him funny. Thank God the spinoff, Michael Jordan 2, I guess, Space Golf, hasn't come out yet, but let's try it. So, that's pretty much the end. Scott, does this movie hold up?
You're damn right it holds up. I mean, luckily, besides Sean Bradley, they got a lot of players that people still recognize. So it doesn't feel that dated, you know? And the humor isn't dated at all. You know, making fun of Disney or bad agents or sponsorship deals or Bill Murray just being Bill Murray. None of that gets dated at all. I mean, this movie's 18 years old, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it holds up really well. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the like 2.5D animation style, but it doesn't look dated. So I think it holds up really well. It's not as terrible as I think we all thought it was going to be.
Steve, Aaron, would you recommend this movie?
I actually would. I enjoyed rewatching it. I feel like we talked about the Muppets a little bit earlier and how having the humans in the cartoons didn't really equate with the Muppets. But like the Muppets, some of these characters are classics. They're timeless. You know, a Daffy Duck, a Foghorn Leghorn, that's going to appeal, you know, it's appealed for close to 100 years now, and it's going to continue to appeal to audiences. So, yeah, I think it holds up, and I'd absolutely recommend that somebody see it if they haven't.
Steve-o?
I would agree with Aaron, really. This was a high-budget film in the 90s, and these characters stayed true to really their niches, and it didn't get the best ratings, really, but I thought it held up quite well, so definitely.
I think, you know, and just to close out, I think of all the movies from the era, not only is it so self-aware in a way that a lot of animated movies in the time were not, I think the jokes in many ways are both so classic and so weird that they last. But I think in general, it's a fairly creative idea for a movie, which doesn't happen all that often. And so I totally think it holds up. some of the pacing at the beginning is a little bit slow, and some of the real people acting isn't great, but I think overall it's a good movie. And so, Scott, as the Defender, which classic song, which I guess is another part of it, because this movie is such a time capsule to the middle 90s as far as music goes, should we go out on?
Nick, I believe I can fly.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you for listening to Myopia Defend Your Childhood, and let's listen to Seal Try to Fly. I believe I can fly. Woo. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away. I believe I can soar.
Myopia, Defend Your Childhood, is brought to you by DudeLetter.com. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and produced by Ann Burns. The theme song is Caroline, written and performed by The Serenaders. Purchase their newest album, Don't Ever Tell Her No, available through the Amazon link on DudeLetter.com. Questions or comments? Please visit DudeLetter.com for all your Myopia, Defend Your Childhood needs, or contact us through myopia@DudeLetter.com. Tonight's episode was also sponsored by McDonald's, guaranteed to make you look like Michael Jordan when you eat it in just an undershirt watching TV. Additional funding by Bill Murray, because why the hell not? Tune in next time, and we'll put another little piece of your past on trial.
Myopia Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reichel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.